the future of the economy, and aviation's part in it. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. Among the speakers scheduled to address attendees on the opening day session of NBAA 2009 was Rich Carlgaard, the publisher of Forbes magazine and an active pilot himself. As you might imagine, his perspective produced some interesting comments. NBAA President Ed Boland did a much better job introducing Rich than I can, so here it is.
Rich Carlgaard was born in Bismarck, North Dakota. He was educated at Stanford, but for an awfully long time, he's been the publisher of Forbes magazine, where he has followed business trends carefully, but most notably, trends in the new economy, watching how technology is changing the way people live. But as part of that, he's also focusing intently on business aviation. Because over 10 years ago, Rich Carlgaard learned how to fly, and he's been flying his airplane for business ever since. In 2004, Rich used his airplane to fly around the country doing interviews, and that productive use of his time led to Life 2.0, a book Rich published in 2004. If you follow his digital rules column, you will often see business aviation highlighted. That includes his most recent column in the October edition of Forbes. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome the publisher of Forbes magazine, Rich Carlgaard.
Thanks, Ed, for that kind introduction. I want to thank Jack Pelton. About 6 weeks ago, Jack let me fly the beautiful Cessna Mustang, and we took it up to 41,000 feet, where it got 66 gallons per hour. If you do the math, that's about 5.6 gallons per miles per gallon. And if you fill the seats, it gets better fuel economy than a Honda Accord. I don't think that story actually gets out. I told my wife this was the highlight of the year, getting to fly the Cessna Mustang. She said, what about our 25th wedding anniversary? Well, I said, you know, it's the job of a journalist to speak truth to power. So I want to say a few words about the economy. What happened? Where are we going from here? You have to realize that 2.5 years ago, just 30 months ago, the U.S. Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson described the U.S. economy and the global economy as being in the best shape that he'd seen in his career. The best shape that he'd seen in his career. With hindsight, it kind of looks like a ridiculous statement, right? But in fact, it was the truth. The global economy had 5 years of 5% growth. The U.S. economy had 5 years of 3% growth. All of you in the room 30 months ago were enjoying pretty good order books. You know, 5% global growth off a $60 trillion economy is $3 trillion of new economic output every year. That's about the size of the Chinese economy. That's what this great global engine of capitalism was doing not that long ago. We now know the recession started in December 2007, but it was kind of a rolling start, and the evidence is very ambiguous. Throughout the first half of 2008, it was not all that clear. A lot of it depended on where you lived. A lot depended on what industry you were in. A lot of you had still pretty good forecasts in the first half of 2008. We were supposedly in recession. We never met the technical definition of recession, one of them anyway, which is two quarters of contraction. We never met another one, which is sort of declining prices due to falling demand. In fact, I remember interviewing a panel of chief financial officers in May 2008 across a broad variety of industries, and their biggest worry in 2008, in May, was inflation. They were starting to see price increases in their supply chain on a quarterly basis. So things were slowing down, but it was not all that obvious. Then in September, to be specific, September 15th, 2008, the economy went off a cliff. What happened? Well, the financial markets locked up. They went into cardiac arrest. They went into what I call a blackout. Now, you all know what an electricity blackout is, or a bandwidth blackout. It means that a few bad nodes on the network can bring down the whole system. And what was confusing about September 15th was when the Treasury Department let Lehman Brothers fail after having saved AIG, and all of a sudden nobody knew what the rules were anymore. Nobody had any kind of sense of what was going to get saved, what was not going to get saved. This was exacerbated by the fact that the Bush administration was outgoing. It was a lame duck administration. There was going to be an election on September 15th, you might recall, that Barack Obama and John McCain were in a dead heat. Nobody knew anything. Nobody knew what was going on. Nobody knew what the values were on bank balance sheets specifically, and that's why the credit system locked up. There were some incredibly bad pieces of legislation and regulatory change that had happened in 2006 and 2007 that nobody knew at the time would cause so much damage. One of them was an amendment to how we define mark-to-market accounting. Now, to get mark-to-market accounting, all you have to do is imagine that you bought a house for $500,000, you put 20% down, you're making mortgage payments on a $400,000 loan. Now, suppose your neighbor, who's less disciplined than you, doesn't have as good a credit rating as you, finds that he has to sell his house, his identical house next door to yours, and he takes the first offer that comes along, and it's $350,000. Now, you know your house is worth more than that, but according to mark-to-market accounting, strictly applied, all of a sudden you have to mark down the value of your house. It's now worth $350,000, which means that you are underwater if you have a $400,000 loan. So all of these bank loans out there that were still performing were getting marked down. The banks had to sell stock to meet capital reserves. The short sellers took advantage of it. And we got this incredible spiral and cock-up that resulted in a six-month financial blackout. We started coming out in March. One reason is because Congress put pressure on the Financial Accounting Standards Board and the SEC to amend these silly rules. So what happened was is that we were going into probably an ordinary recession in 2008. All of a sudden, we had this financial lockup of 6 months, and the damage was pretty terrific. The damages caused by that probably makes this recession comparable to 73 and 74. The amount that stocks dropped is about the same. The unemployment is the same. The ill mood in the country is the same. Really, it was the recession, it was the bad recession that didn't need to happen, but it happened through a series of policy errors, and now we have to live through this. Reason I bring up the 70s, you could make other comparable recessions. I mean, the 70s weren't so bad for aviation. The 80 to 82 recession was another nasty one with 10% unemployment. But the reason I picked 73 and 74 is that the recovery from that recession was kind of interesting. And I think we're going to have a similar kind of a recovery. It's going to be a recovery that once it gets going, I think inflation is going to kick up. I think the headlines are going to be we're going to be reintroduced to the word stagflation. When you read the papers, you're going to see endless stories about a jobless recovery. And so on the whole, it's not going to look that great.
If you haven't already left to go buy gold and more canned chili for your fallout shelter, stay with us through the break, and Rich gets to the good news. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Arrow News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're going to fly in the soup, you got to have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack, and we're listening to Rich Karlgaard's comments from opening day at NBAA 2009 last week. He's just getting to the good part.
So why did Ed bring me up here to talk about all of this bad news. I want to give you two pieces of good news. One is sort of the historical comparison of the 1970s, which I think will apply today. I've given you the bad comparison. And then to talk a little bit about global growth. The upside of the 1970s, and there was, you know, even the worst economic decades have upsides. Even the 1930s, not everything was all dire. Some industries did pretty good. Aviation did not have a bad 1930s. Hollywood had a great 1930s. If you look at a movie made in 1930 versus one made in 1939, you see tremendous progress. You're talking about a movie like The Thin Man in 1930. You're talking about The Wizard of Oz or Gone with the Wind in 1939. Tremendous progress in an awful economic decade. Well, the 70s might have been the second worst economic decade of the 20th century. And yet, think of the companies that were started in the 1970s. It's incredible. It might have been the best decade ever for entrepreneurial startups. 1970, Little Rock, Arkansas. Fred Smith starts Federal Express. He moved it to Memphis in 1973. May 1971, Southwest Airlines makes its maiden voyage out of Love Field in Dallas, Texas. 1975, Bill Gates leaves Harvard after his junior year, moves to Albuquerque, New Mexico, starts a company called MICRO-SOFT, to write a programming language for a kit computer. If you want a real hoot, Google Microsoft 1975 and do it with Google Images and look at the founding team and ask yourself, would you have funded this founding team? And the answer would have been no way. 1976, Apple Computer was started in a garage in Los Altos, California. 1976, the whole biotechnology revolution was started with a company named Genentech. 1977, Larry Ellison, who's a big fan of big jets, started Oracle in 1977. Charles Schwab started Discount Brokerage in the 1970s. Intel invented the microprocessor, the most important single invention of the last 50 years in the 1970s. So the upside of all of this is that these kinds of recessions act as clear out things that don't work. As Warren Buffett says, when you have these recessions and markets drop and the tide goes out, then we find out who's been swimming without clothes. And we find out which business models don't work. We're going to make way for new business models. So we're not going to be in this forever. History certainly speaks clearly on that. And the second thing is global growth. Even in a crappy year like this, China's going to grow 8%, India 6%, Brazil 5%, Australia 5%. I mean, there is growth around the world. And that's not going to stop. I was in China about a month ago. And China's kind of odd, you know, when you look at it from an American perspective. They were all full of pride celebrating the 60th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China. Now, we kind of, you know, I don't think the People's Republic of China had a terribly auspicious start. And I don't think Mao was, you know, was a great leader. And so when you see these people celebrating Mao and taking great pride in this, there's a lot of confusion. And you wonder whether they really believe in Mao or they really believe in economic growth. And is their belief in economic growth really deeply rooted? You know, or will it all collapse come the first crisis? And I'm, you know, I would bet every dollar I have that they are committed to growth, that these people are tasting. These people, the Chinese are rightly proud of their culture, which was a dominant culture in the world, and then went to sleep for millennia and is now awakening, and they take great pride in that. This growth is not going to stop. Compound 8% growth, you know, over several years, and you see what's going to happen. I believe the same thing is going to happen in India, and I do think that South America is finally waking up too. Global growth. If you track global growth, you know, from the birth of Christ to about the beginning of the 1800s, the globe grew at less than one-half of 1% per year. Then came the Industrial Revolution, steam engines applied to milling, steam engines applied to the locomotive, and all of a sudden it starts ticking up to about 1% a year. And then you get into the second half of the 19th century and steamships are crossing the oceans and global trade starts picking up. And now it starts ticking up to about a point and a half. And that actually was the 50 years of the U.S.-China experience, where the U.S. was growing at 6, 7, 8% per year from the end of the Civil War up through World War I. And then you get all of these technologies, the airplane, the television, the microprocessor, the internet, and you see that all of these add to global productivity, and the curve of global growth on an annual basis is a hockey stick. And we're living in this hockey stick period, and I don't think that's going away. So I think there's plenty of reason to be hopeful, short term, maybe not so much, but you look at the history of the 1970s and the innovation that occurred in a lousy economic decade that happened here, and you look at what's happening around the planet, and I don't know if a year from now or 2 years from now we're going to come back as happy as we were 2 years ago, but I guarantee you in 3 or 4 years we will. Thank you very much.
Rich Karlgaard is the publisher of Forbes magazine. If you want to follow updates in his thoughts, his blog is called Digital Rules, and you can find it at http://blogs.forbes.com/digital-rules. Don't add a www in there or you won't find it. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.